The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
One of the big questions in the presidential campaign is whether or when Paul Ryan will make his peace with Donald Trump, which would signal that the Republican establishment is accepting what is obviously the will of the voters. There's no candidate still standing who will contest Trump at the convention. But if the Republican establishment is still against him, it's going to be an amazing thing to see. And some officials are threatening to skip Cleveland altogether. Staff writer Amy Davidson has been thinking about two Democratic conventions of years past that shed some light on what could happen in Cleveland, and she has a little history lesson for us about the value of putting up a fight.
The question really for the Republicans is, if the convention isn't a means to prevent Donald Trump from being the nominee, does it have any use? Is there anything that can be done to at least say, in the context of the convention, that this is not the party of Donald Trump? The GOP might consider looking at one of the Democratic conventions, the Democratic Convention of 1980.
The battle was fought by two good men, Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter.
President Carter, who was the incumbent, had hundreds of more delegates than the next nearest contender, Ted Kennedy, and he had hundreds more than he needed for an absolute majority. But Kennedy still went looking for a fight.
I want my delegates to know that they are going to vote their conscience, no matter what that rule is going to be this evening, on issues of platform and the issues of the nomination.
His only chance to get the nomination was basically to have all of the rules changed, to have them rewritten, so that none of the delegates who had been pledged to either of the candidates had to keep to those pledges.
We cannot afford to nominate a Democratic candidate who will be quoting Herbert Hoover in the fall.
Kennedy thought that with the Kennedy magic, with his idea of leadership, with the questions about Carter's leadership because of the hostage crisis which was unfolding then, that he could grab it.
I say the 4 years we've had already are 4 years too many.
It didn't work, partly because Jimmy Carter made the case, similar to one hears from the Trump side now, that this would be outright theft, that he had won those delegates fair and square, and that for all of the talk of conscience and freedom, what was being attempted was really something kind of low.
It's almost incomprehensible how a brokered, horse-traded, smoke-filled room convention could be labeled open, and the decision made by 20 million Democrats in the open primaries and the open caucuses could be called closed.
But Kennedy had gone there trying something that Republicans today seem to think is impossible, to try to do whatever he could within the rules, because it's within the rules to try to change the rules, to change the direction of the party that he thought was going off the rails.
Well, I'm deeply gratified by the support I received on the rules fight tonight, but not quite as gratified as President Carter.
At its heart, it was a question of ambition. It was a question of his idea that he'd be a better leader. Nobody there was saying the sort of things that Republicans are saying about Donald Trump. Nobody was calling Jimmy Carter a con man or a fraud or somebody who it wouldn't be safe to have in the White House. This was really about two choices that even Ted Kennedy, when pressed, would concede were reasonable choices.
I am confident that the Democratic Party will reunite on the basis of democratic principles and that together we will march towards a democratic victory in 1980.
The convention isn't just about choosing a candidate. It's about defining the party, about the party's identity. Not only who is our candidate, but who are we? One of the moments when a lot of Republicans recoiled from Trump before he secured the nomination came when he seemed to go back and forth about whether he was willing to disavow the endorsement of David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
And certainly I would disavow if I thought there was something wrong. But you may have groups in there that are totally fine, and it would be very unfair. So give me a list of the groups, and I'll let you know.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but...
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know David Duke.
The whole question of the Klan and their involvement in politics is actually one that the country's been dealing with for more than a century and a half. And it was one that was an issue at the 1924 Democratic Convention. The two leading candidates who arrived at the convention in 1924 were William McAdoo of California and Governor Al Smith of New York. But before the convention even got to the question of who the nominee was going to be, there was a fight over the party platform, all of the positions the party was going to take on any number of issues. There was a wing of the party that thought it was important to include in the platform a plank, a passage, explicitly disavowing and condemning the Ku Klux Klan by name.
The vote of the Tennessee delegation will accordingly be recorded as a roll for Mr. McAdoo.
McAdoo managed to keep, by a very, just a handful of votes, he managed to keep the plank out of the Democratic Party platform. So the party did not condemn the Klan. But in killing that plank, he also killed his candidacy. There were enough people who had a principled objection to him becoming the party's candidate after seeing him go to any lengths he could for the Klan. Al Smith, though, didn't have enough votes to get the nomination himself. So it came down to whether he was going to let McAdoo win or if he was just going to keep blocking the convention as long as he could. And he took the latter path for 103 ballots. There are descriptions from the time of people, some of them sleep-deprived, staggering around the floor, and others kicking each other, punching each other, just getting into all-out physical brawls, sweltering in an unair-conditioned Madison Square Garden in the middle of the summer.
This announcement is made in recognition of the efficiency of the police of the city of New York and of the...
After nearly 100 ballots...
Now, one amazing thing about the history of the convention is that the floor manager for Al Smith, the one who was, you know, rounding up votes for the plank condemning the Klan and then for Smith's nomination, was a young politician named Franklin D. Roosevelt.
For the sake of the party, therefore, Governor Smith authorizes me to say that immediately upon the withdrawal by Mr. McAdoo of his name, Governor Smith will withdraw his name also from the consideration...
John Davis, the candidate the convention eventually arrived at, had no real chance. But for the delegates in 1924, it was better to lose with Davis than to win with McAdoo and the Klan. And that was the decision they made. If the Republican Party is going to have some sort of self-respect left or dignity left, or if those ideas are important to it, then options like rules fights, like platform fights, like taking part in the debate over what the party is going to be, matter. It might be the case that the noblest thing a Republican can do is stay as far away from Cleveland and the Trump convention as possible. But there's something to be said for standing on the convention floor in Cleveland and shouting no.
Amy Davidson is a staff writer for The New Yorker, and she's been watching the campaigns extremely carefully online and in our pages. And you can find her writing about Paul Ryan and Donald Trump and so many other topics at newyorkerradio.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.